Media Insider is paying tribute to the milestone moments of the totally awesome 80s, where you found love on the Princess Cruise Line, the Sony Walkman made it possible to take your music on the go, music videos were the new after-school extracurricular activity, Aaron Spelling was the king of primetime TV, Steven Spielberg dominated at the box office, and CNN changed the way you got the news. Here's your totally radical host, Professor D.
The year was 1980. In sports, the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the LA Rams at the Super Bowl. Kramer versus Kramer won for Best Picture at the 52nd Academy Awards. Muhammad Ali toured Africa on a diplomatic mission under President Carter. Studio 54 closed its legendary doors with a grand closing party on February 4th. West Side Story opened in New York City for 341 amazing performances. Susan Lucci lost for the first time at the Daytime Emmy Awards, and on March 21st, everyone was wondering who shot JR. Good thing post-it notes were introduced on April 6th to keep all these 80s facts straight. In the background of all these events was a new wave of music complete with synthesizers and plenty of 80s attitude. Some of the big hits of the year included Rock Lobster by the B-52s, Love Stinks by the Jay Giles Band, and Cars by Gary Numan landed the number 9 spot on Billboard on June 7th. Although Numan had a string of hits in the UK, he launched a new category of music in the 80s known as the one-hit wonder. The top-selling single of the year went to Blondie with the theme song to American Gigolo starring Richard Gere. Call Me stayed at number 1 for 6 consecutive weeks, making Blondie a household name. Stevie Nicks was originally asked to compose and perform the song, but she declined due to contractual restrictions with Modern Records. Deborah Harry was given a rough instrumental track, and she wrote the number 1 hit in just a couple of hours. As Richard Gere was driving the California coast at the box office, Jason Voorhees made his debut at Camp Crystal Lake in the slasher horror film Friday the 13th. Sleepaway Camp was never the same after that. Who knew Friday the 13th would have a total of 8 installments? The slasher movie genre gained popularity with Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, and the famous Chucky doll, who was no good guy in the Child's Play series. We were afraid to go to camp, afraid to fall asleep, and afraid to go in the water as Jaws continued to scare us 3D style in 1983. A movie ticket only cost $3.15, and your blue and red 3D glasses were free. But before we get into box office nostalgia, we conclude the year 1980 with one of the first tragedies of a new decade. Nick is on our research team with some details about one of the darkest days in music.
John Lennon was shot and killed on December 8, 1980 by Mark David Chapman. The shooting took place at the Dakota, which was the apartment building where John Lennon lived, in New York City. Lennon had signed an autograph for Chapman just hours before the murder. Lennon's wife, Yoko Ono, did not want the media to announce his death until she told their 5-year-old son, Sean, who was home at the time. On December 14, 1980, a moment of silence was held in Lennon's honor and memory. Chapman admitted in his parole hearing that he was a sociopath who killed Lennon just to become famous. Chapman was just 25 at the time of the murder. As of September 2016, Chapman has still been denied parole.
The month of December came to a close as Americans shined lights for 417 seconds, remembering the 52 American hostages who spent 417 days in Iran, marking the second Christmas holiday away from their loved ones. Hold on to your Cabbage Patch Dolls. Music television is about to make its way into our living rooms. August 1st, 1981 is the day that changed music by launching the first 24-hour music channel and the first 5 VJs who became as popular as the Beatles.
Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll.
Mark Goodman, J.J. Jackson, Martha Quinn, Alan Hunter, and Nina Blackwood were the Fab Five that gave us music news, exclusive interviews, and our favorite videos. The first music video ever played on MTV was Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles, which was featured on their album The Age of Plastic. Trevor Horn was inspired to write the song after reading a science fiction story about an opera singer living in a world without sound. The video was shot in one day in South London with Hans Zimmer on keyboards. The message behind the video was that technology was on the verge of having a major impact on our lives. Radio was out, video was in. The song was a huge hit in England, but unheard of in America. Radio stations weren't playing the song, so album sales were non-existent in the U.S. When MTV decided to use the song to introduce the new network, the song exploded, and it was clear that MTV would have power and influence in the music industry.
I heard you on the wireless back in 52, lying awake intently tuning in on you. If I was young, it didn't stop you coming through.
Angelica is on our research team with more milestone MTV moments.
In 1983, Michael Jackson was said to have broken the color barrier on MTV when the music video for Billie Jean was aired for the first time on the network. But before 1983, you wouldn't find very many African-American artists on MTV, and it was said that it was because it was predominantly a rock music-based channel, and it was difficult to find African-American artists who played that style of music. The lack of African-American artists on MTV was even criticized by David Bowie in an interview with MTV VJ Mark Goodman when Bowie says he's floored at the fact that there were so few black artists being featured on the network. And he goes on to put Goodman on the spot by asking him why that was. Goodman's response was that the network wanted to start moving in the direction of playing more black artists, but that they also wanted to play the type of music that the entire country would like. MTV's decision to air Michael Jackson's Billie Jean music video is said to have happened after Walter Yetnikoff, the president of CBS Records at the time, had threatened to stop providing MTV with music videos from other artists on the label. After the success of the Billie Jean music video, the video for Beat It was premiered on MTV in March of 1983, and later that year on December 2nd, the Thriller music video was released. The Thriller video was directed by John Landis and was the only 14-minute long video on MTV at the time.
Thanks, Angelica. Michael Jackson's Thriller continues to be one of the best-selling albums of all time, including hits like Wannabe Startin' Somethin', The Girl Is Mine, Billie Jean, Human Nature, PYT, and The Lady in My Life. Other fun facts about Michael Jackson's Thriller is that Thriller spent 122 weeks on the Billboard 200. It was a critically acclaimed album that won 8 Grammy Awards, including 1984's Album of the Year, and at its peak, the album sold 1 million copies worldwide per week. So much of the 80s pop culture was influenced by one man and a long string of hit movies. Are you ready? National Lampoon's Vacation, Mr. Mom, 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club, Weird Science, Pretty in Pink, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Some Kind of Wonderful, and who could forget Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with Steve Martin and John Candy. This is just a small part of John Hughes' movie legacy. He finished the 80s decade with another big-hearted buffoon role for John Candy in the movie Uncle Buck, and continued his successful movie streak with the Home Alone franchise in the 90s. Molly Ringwald owes her career to Hughes with the hit movie 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club, and Pretty in Pink. Carlos and Samantha are part of our movie research team, and they have the top 5 highest grossing movies for you.
Here's my list of the highest grossing movies of the 80s. In at number 5 is Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, that made $242 million. Number 4 is The Dark Knight himself, Batman, that made $251 million. Up next at number 3, and my personal favorite, Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back, at $290 million. Number 2 is Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, that made $309 million. Drumroll please. Number one is E.T., the extraterrestrial, that made $434 million. And that's my list of the highest grossing movies of the 80s.
Danielson, show me wax on, wax off.
Here's some fun behind-the-scenes facts for you movie lovers. For Ghostbusters, the marshmallow goo was actually shaving cream. More than 50 gallons was dumped on Walter Peck, almost knocking him to the ground. And the one that I find the most interesting is for The Shining. According to Shelley Duvall, the infamous Here's Johnny scene took 3 days to film and the use of 60 doors. And did you know, for Dirty Dancing, the very famous scene where Johnny and Baby are practicing their dancing and they are just crawling towards each other on the floor wasn't intended to be part of the film. They were just messing around and were warming up to do the real scene. But the director liked it so much, he kept it in the film. And for Flashdance, Jennifer Beals' trend-setting Carlos sweatshirt came out by accident. The sweatshirt, which Beals brought from home, had shrunk in the wash, and she had to cut the collar off in order to get it over her head. And finally, for Footloose, in a 2013 interview with Howard Stern, Kevin Bacon admitted that he actually tipped DJs at weddings not to play Footloose. He stated that people expect him to dance the song as he did in the movie. In truth, while he did do some of the dancing, there was also a dancing double for him as well.
The fun fact about The Shining is my personal favorite too. O.J. Simpson was almost selected to play the Terminator. Instead, James Cameron wanted Arnold Schwarzenegger for the starring role. Carlos says a few more interesting facts about the stars who almost played the leading roles in these blockbuster classics.
Al Pacino almost acted alongside Chewbacca as Han Solo in Star Wars. Robin Williams was also very close to playing Jack Nicholson's role in The Shining. Indiana Jones was going to be played by Tom Selleck. And can you imagine Mission Impossible spy Tom Cruise playing Ferris Bueller?
Bueller?
He's sick.
Michael J. Fox starred in the movie that almost wasn't. The script for Back to the Future was rejected a record 40 times before it was finally approved.
Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
Fashion in the early 80s centered around fitness. Olivia Newton-John set the wheels in motion with her album Physical in 1981, where Olivia sports a more sexy, athletic look for the video and album cover. The hit single Let's Get Physical still remains Olivia's biggest hit of her career, with a record-breaking 10-week run at number one on Billboard. It was ranked the top song by Billboard in 1982. Good thing we had our Sony Walkmans. Sam's got more on the 80s fashion.
There is no other phase that can compare to the 80s fashion trend. It was all big hair and neon colors, Reeboks and members-only jackets, tracksuits, especially of velour, and power suits, straight from Wall Street. A major part of the fashion trends were copying the stars, which is also very evident today. Whether you were wearing lace gloves and rubber bracelets like Madonna or leg warmers like Jane Fonda, you were copying the famous. It applied to the men too, wearing linen suits with the sleeves pushed up and no socks like Don Johnson in Miami Vice. Everyone wanted to be a star. Now we have to talk about the hair. Crimped, permed, teased, it was put through it all, and your roots will never forgive you. There were jerry curls from Michael Jackson or wrap-ups from Madonna. Everyone had a huge can of Aquanet on their dresser. And then there are the styles we would all love to forget, the mullet and the rat tail. They're two things that I will never understand. How about the accessories? Huge earrings in order to sparkle, shoulder pads for who knows why, and jean jackets because it was all denim all the time. Check out throwback episodes of Dallas and Dynasty for some formal 80s fashion.
The fitness culture continued to boom with the famous workout tapes by Jane Fonda and Richard Simmons. Even Mattel hit the fitness floor with Great Shape Barbie, released in 1983. It came complete with workout bag, exercise leotard, matching headband, leg warmers, ballet slippers, and an exercise booklet. She had to log her results, but I don't think she was counting carbs. We didn't do that in the 80s. We did have a lot of fun toys, and Nate's got the details on some of the most famous games of the 80s.
The 80s was an important time in video gaming. Many people call the 80s the golden age of video games. The arcade video game industry was booming. The US alone is generating close to $5 billion in revenue annually. Gaming pioneers like Pac-Man, Tron, and Street Fighter were released in the 80s, along with many other well-known titles. Also, in the early 80s, the third generation of consoles was released, introducing Famicom, which was later introduced as the NES and the Sega Genesis. Three of the best-selling games in the 80s were Super Mario Bros., Tetris, and Duck Hunt, which are now home classics. Super Mario Bros. Is a 2D platformer where you play as either Super Mario or his brother Luigi to save Princess Peach from the evil King Koopa. who is better known as Bowser. Tetris is another 80s classic, the puzzle game where the primary way to score points is to create horizontal rows within the zone. And if you like shooters, Duck Hunt is a shooter game in which the objective is to shoot moving targets on the television screen in mid-flight. The game is played from first-person perspective and requires the NES Zapper light gun, which the players aim and fire at the TV screen.
When we got tired of the video games, board games was another source of entertainment, and Justin's got the details.
The 1980s were a fantastic decade for board games, so good that a lot of these games are still popular to this day. Some of the most popular board games are Monopoly, the game of real estate where the goal is to own as many properties as possible and force other players to pay rent if they land on your property. And Scrabble, the classic crossword game that keeps score with added incentives such as double letter and triple word. Some other of my favorite games were Boggle, which is similar to Scrabble, where you have to make a word out of random letters, and Clue, the murder mystery game. I was always a huge fan of Clue because my father was a police officer, so I always felt like I was the cop trying to solve the murder mystery. There were also Snakes and Ladders, a dice game where you got to race your friends up the board using the help of ladders, but doing everything you could to avoid those snakes. Since I was a huge fan of Tic-Tac-Toe, Connect Four was also one of my favorites, because it added just a little twist by having to get four in a row instead of the classic three.
And let's not forget Twister, Sorry, and Trivial Pursuit. I had a great collection of some of those Hot Wheels and Matchbox cars, and Delaney's got the details on some of the hottest cars of the 80s.
Looking back to the 80s, there were several memorable cars from the decade that are still famous today. One of the most recognized cars from the era would be the DeLorean. Made from 1981 to 1983, this car became known as the car that was featured as a time machine in Back to the Future. The 1969 General Lee Charger, driven in the 80s TV series Dukes of Hazzard, is still replicated to this day by diehard fans of the show. In 1983, Stephen King's novel film Christine, the famous car, is a possessed 1957 Plymouth Fury, which became quickly known as an icon after the movie was released. Billy F. Gibbons of ZZ Top built a 1933 Ford and had a photo of it on the album Eliminator. And quickly after that, the car became an icon of the 80s known as the Eliminator. Short-lived through the 80s would be the Pontiac Fiero, made from 1984 to 1988. This car made an appearance in Ferris Bueller's Day Off and was shortly discontinued from manufacturing. 80s cars are heavily collected to this day and are arguably the best decade the cars ever had.
80s television was full of sitcoms and nighttime dramas. Here are some of the highest-rated series finales according to New York Times Business Insider. Family Ties, starring Michael J. Fox, reached over 36.3 million viewers for their series finale. The Cosby Show reached 44.4 million viewers. Magnum P.I. reached 50.7 million viewers. And Cheers had an even larger viewing audience with 84.4 million viewers for their series finale. And the highest rated series finale of all TV time is MASH, with 150.9 million viewers for their send-off. Do you know what MASH stands for? I'll tell you after Danny gives us even more details on 80s TV.
Broadcasting many shows we still enjoy today, the 1980s was its own golden age for television. MASH aired its record-breaking series finale on February 28, 1983, after 11 seasons. The show focused on the staff of an army hospital in the Korean War, finding ways to laugh through difficult situations. 105.9 million viewers, nearly half of the U.S. population at the time, watched the finale, Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen. Series star Alan Alda, who played Captain Benjamin Franklin, Hawkeye Pierce, directed the final episode. The MASH finale currently ranks at number 9 in the top 20 most watched broadcasts of all time, the only television show among 19 Super Bowls. The 1980s also saw many unusual and groundbreaking sitcom premises, as television showrunners focused more on content. Premiering in 1984, Who's the Boss reversed gender roles with a woman as the breadwinner and a man as the homemaker. With its portrayal of a family with two successful African-American parents, a doctor and a lawyer, The Cosby Show made a crucial, lasting impact on how African Americans are perceived and how they perceive themselves. Bill Cosby and Felicia Rashad guided their five children through the ups and downs of life. The funny yet honest show tackled serious topics like race and social class. Countless notable guest stars visited the Huxtable family, including Sammy Davis Jr., Naomi Campbell, Stevie Wonder, Debbie Allen, Christopher Plummer, and John Ritter. For 5 seasons, The Cosby Show held the number 1 spot in ratings. What happens when 4 previously married older women live in the same house in Miami? Plenty of laughs and a lot of late-night cheesecake. The Golden Girls starred Bea Arthur as Voice of Reason, Betty White as optimistic nitwit Rose Nyland, Rue McClanahan as sex-crazed Southern Belle, and Estelle Getty as Sicilian immigrant and Dorothy's mother, Sophia Petrillo. The hit sitcom's 4 main cast members each won an Emmy for their roles. The only other series to boast that feat are All in the Family and Will and Grace. In the 1980s, sitcom spinoffs were a dime a dozen. Some 80s sitcoms pulled double duty parenting shows and serving as spinoffs themselves. The Jeffersons grew out of All in the Family and also launched Checking In. A Different World was a spinoff of The Cosby Show, telling the story of life in college for second eldest Huxtable daughter, Denise, played by Lisa Bonet. Happy Days, the sitcom that launched 1,000 other sitcoms, parented several shows including Mork and Mindy, Laverne and Shirley, and Joni Loves Chachi. Different Strokes and its spinoff, The Facts of Life, even had the same trio of writers for their theme songs. Al Burton, Gloria Loring, and her then-husband Alan Thicke, who was a 1980s sitcom star in his own right. Nicknamed America's Dad, he played Dr. Jason Seaver on Growing Pains. Let's take a look at some behind-the-music facts of 80s TV theme songs. Where Everybody Knows Your Name, the iconic Cheers theme, almost wasn't. According to one of the song's writers, Gary Portnoy, he and Judy Hart composed a song, People Like Us, as the opening number for the musical Preppies. A Hollywood producer heard a tape of the song and wanted it as the theme for the new show Cheers, with rewritten lyrics to relate to the regulars of a Boston bar. But, as fate would have it, Preppies producers wouldn't give up People Like Us, which forced Portnoy and Hart to write a new song for Cheers. The duo's first 2 tries at new songs flopped, but the 3rd time was the charm. The tune synonymous with the reality court show genre is the theme music for The People's Court, which premiered in 1981. Titled The Big One, the song was composed by British composer Alan Tu and has been sampled by several hip-hop artists, including Jay-Z in his 2000 song People's Court and Nelly in his 2003 song Is You. The classic Inspector Gadget theme song was inspired by another classical piece of music. In the cartoon's theme, composers Haim Saban and Shuki Levy use some elements from Hall of the Mountain King, an 1867 orchestral piece by Edvard Grieg. The Miami Vice theme song is one of the few instrumental songs to ever make Billboard's Top 10 chart. For 20 years, the Miami Vice soundtrack was the last TV soundtrack to hit number 1 on the Billboard Albums chart until High School Musical took over in 2006. Other iconic instrumental theme songs of the 80s include Dallas, Magnum P.I., Knight Rider, and the A-Team.
Okay, time's up. Let me tell you what MASH stands for. Mobile Army Surgical Hospital. Now, if you're a true MASH fan, you probably already knew that. We're going to need more than one episode to talk about the Totally Radical 80s. Check back with Media Insider for the sequel to Totally Awesome 80s.
Media Insider is a Blue Cult Radio production written, produced, and hosted by Professor D. Student interviews included Nicholas Lifkin, Carlos Velasquez, Samantha Scaplin, Danielle Levis, Samantha Heyer, Nathaniel Brown, Deja Carmen, and Delaney Koch. Research elements were conducted by Treasure Eno, Adriana Blanco, Samantha Piazza, Michael Ugantade, and Angelica Mendoza. Subscribe to our upcoming podcast by logging on to bluecoltradio.com and clicking the purple podcast icon. For interview segments and research elements, I'm Justin Maggi for Media Insider on Blue Colt Radio.